This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart. But you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
From Z to Infinity. This is Zoe, and I'll be discussing what happens when we. There's different things that people think that takes place when people pass away. And also, this physical realm isn't all we see. And so, what other things take place on the other side of this physical reality? And also spiritual attachments, that people can have spiritual attachments onto them from either family or generational or angelic in different forms. Today is Wednesday, September 16th, 2022, and so many things are taking place with the injections, with the wars, with the economy, and people can look up in their skies and see lines of chemtrails that they're spraying toxic poison onto people, causing many different events to take place. And later on, I'll meet. Bryce is going to be joining me, but right now, and he's my co-host. But right now, I'm going to say a poem of my island of peace. No, I don't believe that these spirits' voices say. These spirits that oppress me can lie all night and day. They'll chatter and cause me trouble all through the night, and just getting a good night of sleep becomes a real tiring bite. And even now as I write this, I hear these voices all around me in the air. I'm trying to just settle in for the night, but they haven't a care. And so it goes, another night on the spiritual battlefield. They seek to disrupt, and I seek my peace, and neither will yield. And so it goes, when the night is long, and these voices never cease. But I will let them, but I won't let them break me. I'll reach my island of peace. I'm not sure who that's from. And here's another one. I won't bend. These spirit attachments are lingering around tonight, letting loose with bargage after bargage of voices tonight. These voices insulting me in my own home tonight, acting like tyrants tonight, in that tyrant way that they do, and they know what they're doing. They've got it all planned out. They seek to establish domination, and with these voices, they try and bring that about. Being bullies without remorse is what they are and what they do, and they keep trying to break me down with voices. But I won't bend, and after all these blues, iron can be forged. And I hear these voices now, halfway through the night, saying the same old things, being bullies in the same old way. And their lies won't reach me anymore. I refuse to believe what they're saying when you've heard so many lies before. Almost as an instinct, your mind won't listen. And I'm going to put this in the chat room. And I want to say, call out to everybody in the chat room, like Navy and Comet and Jerbear and Sunshine on a Bag and everyone that May Street 139 and Valerie. And we have a chat room at revolution.radio that everyone can join. And, that's where things will be plugged in that's from the show that we'll be listening to on about today. We'll be covering what's on the other side and also spiritual attachment. And here's Bryce for a moment.
Hi, everybody, and I just want to say a shout-out to my buddy Crow. And look forward to today's show.
And this is from Swedenborg, Off the Left Eye. And they have really good things in their programs. And it's why some people in the afterlife don't know they're dead. And some don't. And that's why there's ghosts and spirit attachments and ghosts and things like that. Have you experienced anything like that, Bryce?
Not that I'm aware of. Well, ghosts and spiritual attachments are kind of two different things, but I have experienced some supernatural type things in the past, but that's long ago.
Like what type of supernatural things?
Just some. Okay, where I used to live in Maryland, there was a place that you could I had to walk everywhere. I lived 2.5 miles from everything, so I'd be walking back along the power lines. And there's this part of the parking lot that it would be what somebody would describe. Somebody had died there, because it could be the middle of summer and the hot mid-Atlantic weather, very humid, but you would just be chilled, very cool and cold when you're walking through that spot, no matter how hot it was. And it was, it's usually, they say that temperature variations like that for no apparent reason are often, you know, there's a spirit or somebody has died there. But that happened all the time walking through that area, even in the hot, humid summer. You know, it would be like 92 degrees at 2 or 3 a.m. And it was
so
we
have a cold spot there. And so that was where the spiritual activity was taking place.
Yes, and I wasn't scared or uncomfortable, but it was, and I never avoided going through that spot, but it was definitely noticeable, and, you know, your hairs would prick up on your arms and the back of your neck.
And that happens to a lot of people, but some people don't understand what they're experiencing. And
yeah,
spiritual activity is very real.
Yeah, it is, and my dad had told me about stuff like that before, where he used to go out jogging when I was little, and there would be like a cold spot, and he'd feel something, and he'd challenge the whoever it was or whatever to present themselves.
Okay, so let's listen to what these people have to say from Swedenborg, and then we'll take it from there.
Guys are here. I'm really glad to be doing this. Welcome to another episode of Swedenborg in Life. We have a lot of fun things to talk about today. Those topics include, number one, why some people in the afterlife don't realize that they've died. Two, how our five senses translate into the spiritual world. And three, how heaven's light affects our minds. And that sounds like some pretty ambitious content to have answers to, but we're going to try our best the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg. We're going to dig in there and see what we have to find. My name is Curtis Childs. I'm with the Swedenborg Foundation. And we have with us a special guest today, author Peter Rhodes. Peter, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. All right. Peter is a favorite of mine in terms of authors of spiritual content. I want to say it on the air. I really dig the stuff you do. I love your books and your videos and all that. They've been one of the things that have really stuck with me. As a tool that, hey, man, I can use this, and it really gets results. So thank you very much, and thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
All right, so Pete's going to help us, and we are going to read a book called Our Life After Death by Emanuel Swedenborg. You guys can download it and read along. This is a download link. You can type that in if you really want to, or open up the description to this video. It's in there. Grab it, and you can read along with us. However, we got the tech side of things right, but I'd like to get the mind right too, because the mind is important. And one way we can do this is sort of tuning out the hell mindset and tuning in the heaven mindset. Swedenborg's most popular book that this book is an excerpt of was called Heaven and Hell. And really, as he described them, they're mindsets in a way. So, Pete, let's start by talking about the mindset we can kind of tune out and avoid, which is the hell mindset. What makes up the hell mindset as Swedenborg describes it?
Well, my experience of it is that the hell mindset is those concerns that are directed mainly towards you. You know, how do I look? How do I come across? So there's an anxiety with that. There's a worry with that. There's a contraction in your gut. That sort of thing. We use the word hell. It's an old word. We could call it anxiety or worry or concern or fear. And that headset doesn't express itself very well. It's not intuitive. It's not responsive. It's not very joyful. It's an unpleasant place to be. And that's been my experience of that.
Yeah, and unpleasant for the people around us when we're in that mindset. Some may call it ego these days. So by pushing away those kinds of things, and just kind of consciously, when those bubble up, we put them aside. That's how you kind of tune away from the hell. But then there's the other side, which is letting in the positive, you know, letting in what he would call heaven. And what in your experience is this heaven mindset?
Well, at first I find that I'm sort of powerless over that negative headspace. And for me, I have to surrender that and ask for help. And the first thing that comes up is that replaces fear is a trust that whoever the creator is, I happen to believe it's God or the Lord or whatever you want to term it, that that power that creates my very life is a loving power. It's a power that has wisdom and that it wishes for good things. So when I surrender my negative concerns of myself and the world, I try to surrender to a power that can take that and do something beneficial for others, and they can do that through me without any concern for myself. So if I'm able to make that transition with the help of what I believe is God, then I can start to move into a responsive place where I'm having a good time.
Yeah, I find that you get this immediate kind of lightness with dropping all this baggage of like, well, how are things going to turn out for me? How am I going to look doing this? When you're just thinking sort of about the task at hand. And if we come in with that kind of mindset, we'll actually, Swedenborg says, absorb, you know, this information better because we're looking towards usefulness with it. So with that in mind, let's get to the text. All right, we have the PDF, Our Life After Death. We're on page 29, if you guys are reading along there, so you can see it. So I'm telling the truth. And the chapter is entitled, We Leave Nothing Behind Except Our Earthly Body. Repeated experience has proved to me that when we move from the material world into the spiritual, which happens when we die, we take with us everything that pertains to our character except our earthly body. In fact, when we enter the spiritual world, or our life after death, which I just want to point out this little phrase here, our life after death is where this book got its title from, we are in a body as we were in this world. Since we don't feel or see any difference, it seems as if nothing has changed. Now our body is spiritual, though, which means it has been separated from earthly matter and purified. Furthermore, when anything spiritual touches and sees something spiritual, it is just like something material touching and seeing something material. So when we have become a spirit, none of our senses tell us we are not in the body we inhabited in the world, and therefore we do not realize that we have died. I want to start, there's a lot in that paragraph that we could go after, but I want to start with that last sentence where he says, therefore, we do not realize that we have died. And we, you know, we titled this this show today, Why Some People in the Afterlife Don't Know That They've Died. And the way that he, Swedenborg, talks about it is kind of that not only is there, are there similarities between the next life and this life that would kind of lead somebody into that, but that even the sort of the view of life or the convictions about life that we've adopted are so central to who we are that even people who are shown, oh, you're in another life, if they really have grasped on to, you know, sort of this ego-based kind of mindset, that they can return even after seeing amazing things to sort of how they were before. And I was just thinking, Pete, that that's kind of how we are in life, isn't it? That even if we experience something like some great compassion or love for someone, pretty quickly we can get stuck in our old ego ruts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been to various workshops, you know, 3-day, 4-day weekend workshops, Thich Nhat Hanh and people like that. And in that space, you get into a sort of elevated way of experiencing life, and you think, this is great. I finally are freed from my concerns of self and fear. And I'm expansive, breathing well, and you think this is going to last forever, and you're very close to the people who are there. And my experience is it doesn't take very long to get back to my natural state of being. And I think God works on our natural state of being, and he makes his progress in a slow manner so that we can feel it's our own progress. Whereas we have these environments you can go into, like an ashram or something like that, you can feel a change pretty rapidly. But when you go back to your old environment, you also go back to your old mental and emotional environment as well, I believe.
Yeah, and Swedenborg will often talk about that we bring the life we've made here, we bring it with us, and that the mindsets we have don't just dissipate, you know, and that you're talking about it there, that we can take little vacations, you know, of different kinds while we're on this earth, and we get transported temporarily to a different mindset, but it doesn't stay because there's this sort of core that has been cultivated for much longer, and that one of the things we can be doing in the world is trying to kind of shift that mass a little bit in a positive direction. You know, we put in a little effort, and then you slowly, I think I've heard you describe it like you're turning a tanker. You know, it doesn't happen all at once, right?
Right. Yeah, big ship. You can turn the wheel quite rapidly, but the ship itself takes some time. So we have a lot of momentum going. At least I do. I've had, attitudes from childhood. They've been reinforced as opinions and judgments. So when I want to do spiritual work and change my direction, I can do a lot of work. I can do meditation. I can do a lot of reading. I can do a lot of praying. And I believe it does make a change, but I don't feel a rapid change. You know, in the 60s, maybe if I use marijuana or something, I can feel a rapid change. But that's not mine. That's something that's brought into the brain and into the chemical part of you. The real part of change for me has been slow but significant. I find as you start to turn away from self and turn towards what they say, love of God and love of the neighbor, that gradual turn, although gradual, can be very significant in how you experience other people as well as yourself.
And the way that Swedenborg is describing, even the dying experience, you know, which we talked about a few times ago or a few episodes ago, which is very intense, and you're surrounded by angels and they tell you you're in the next life and this is how things are, and you have all this love, a lot like people will mention in near-death experiences, that has an impact on you for a while. But if it's not accepted into your life, or if it's contrary to what you've kind of made your life, you will slowly return. And because of, as Swedenborg is describing it, you know, there are similarities in the next life, you can actually get back into a mode of life that's close enough that you don't even remember anymore where you are. And that Swedenborg would often have the bizarre experience of talking to spirits in the afterlife and them telling him, oh, there is no afterlife. You know, we're just living in the world, and him having to remind him, don't you remember when you saw those angels and all that? Not that if you get back to that, you can't from there grow out and re-realize where you are and what's happening. But it just goes to show that that the mindset is a powerful thing, and the more that we work on it here, the better chance we have of moving forward. And if you're just joining us, or this is your first time watching, we're here chatting about stuff, but we want to hear what you have to say too. So feel free to leave us a question or a comment. You can do it just in the YouTube comment sections there, or if you're on Facebook, leave it there. We'll find it, and or if you want to share an experience, maybe you've had some kind of out of body experience or encounter with the spiritual world, and you've encountered someone who didn't know that they were there. We want to hear what you have to say. In the meantime, we're going to keep going through the text. So let's get back to the PDF here. Okay, so down to the end of 29, as spirit people, that just meaning, people, you or I, who have passed into the spiritual world after death, we possess every outer and inner sense we had in the world. We see the way we used to. We hear and talk the way we used to. We smell and taste. We feel it when we are touched just the way we used to. We want, wish, crave, think, ponder, are moved, love, and intend the way we used to. Studious types still read and write the way they did before. In a word, when we move from the one life into the other, or from one world into the other, it is like moving from one physical place to another. And we take with us everything we possessed as human beings, to the point that it would be untrue to say we have lost anything of our own after death, which is only a death of the earthly body. And he really hammers this point home, that he doesn't obviously mean that you take your car with you, or you take your video game collection would be nice. But what he's talking about is the things you take with you are the internal things, your personality traits, what makes you you, and that those have the potential to expand and get different there, but they're not gone. You know, certain parts can be dormant or change, and you can certainly be making progress. But he's saying that what you are, then really, I guess that's why life is like it is, because why, Pete, would we live, you know, this whole life with all its nuances if what we are doing here didn't have and importance to the next chapter, right?
Well, I think Swedenborg talks about our spirit actually is in the spiritual world. We don't call it another world or somewhere else. It's kingdom of heavens within you. So most of my life during the day, although I might be driving through the city or I might be on vacation in a paradise type place, most of my life experience is in my feelings and my thoughts and my affections and my emotions. And that's what I'm experiencing most of the time. I can be in a very beautiful place and feel depressed or anxious, and I can be down in the subway in Philadelphia and feel very happy and content. So if I really reflect on my day, it isn't so much physically where I've been and what I've done, what I've seen, but emotionally. So I think when you leave the physical body, you're really very comfortable because that's where you've been spending most of your time anyway. So it just feels very natural to you. I don't spend a whole lot of time paying attention to my physical body as long as it's not in pain and so forth. But I do spend a lot of time experiencing, expressing, and hearing other people express their affections and emotions and thoughts. So I believe that is a spiritual world, is the world of thoughts and affections. And we're already there most of the time, but we just happen to have a five-sensed mechanism that can help us experience this external world. But that's a very thin veneer of who we are and what we experience most of the time.
Yeah, you know, that popular saying comes to mind, we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. And that, yeah, there is sort of a nativeness to the spiritual world when you get there because, yeah, you have been having this sort of dual citizenship experience. And I really agree about that. You can be anywhere and your mind you're on a vacation on a tropical island, but you packed your mind and brought it along. So you have the power to destroy happiness anywhere that you go, you know, and yes, there are times when you can be in a very mundane place, but you just feel really good, which is really worth noting because we so often think we gear our lives towards, okay, if only I have these external changes, then I'll be happy, without realizing how much the internal experience sort of trumps the external. All right, so let's take a look at a couple of questions that people have here and see what they think about the topic. So this is the first one from Mark from YouTube. Do spirits excite the urges, compulsions, and addictive behavior in people because they need a connection to the physical world to enjoy those pleasures after death? And what Mark is referring to here is Swedenborg's idea that, and it's actually very fitting to what we were just talking about, that we are in the spiritual world right now in a way, that our spirit is there, and that Swedenborg said that, yeah, in the spiritual world, your spirit's there, and it's not in a vacuum. It's in that world, and it's being affected by the other people in that world. And so here, Mark is asking about where do our urges come from? You know, we get the, oh, I want to do this. I got to have another of these. Is there a spiritual influence there? And I mean, what comes to mind is I was talking to someone who worked with, you know, schizophrenic people or people with, various, mental illnesses, in a correctional facility. And, you know, he was learning that a lot of them would report that, yeah, these spirits or voices or whatever would very much prompt things in them. And Swedenborg, now that I'm thinking about it, will write about, he says, oh, I was walking down the street and the spirits with me tried to get me to buy this thing or that thing, that they really, and he was more open to that world than most of us are, but he very much did say that there's a sort of a spiritual influence on things and, that affects things. Pete, did you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm a recovering person, and I certainly know what addiction is in my own life. And I personally feel, yeah, there are societies of spirits around me that is their love, those addictive behaviors and addictive ways of thinking and being. And I believe they really want to manifest in the external world. That's where they get their greatest delight if they can do it. But they can't do it directly because they're not in this world. But they can do it through the spirits who also at that time are in this world and have a body. So I think they're really urging you to – it's sort of like someone who is imagining something, imagining a great meal or a beautiful woman or something. The imagination is pretty good, but they really want to have the physical experience. And I think the societies that represent those various addictions want to use man so that they can sort of vicariously experience the man or woman, externalizing it at the lowest level of creation, at the natural physical form. And then there's a certain pleasure they get from doing that. So to me, those urges and desires, they're not created from within me. They're brought to me. I probably am prone to those societies that are my personal addictions. And, yeah, I feel they're very much involved in wanting you to participate in that and then getting some kind of pleasure when you do it, and also giving you their pleasure of that particular behavior. So, yeah, I feel very closely related to societies are involved in those kind of urges and those kind of desires and obsessions.
Yeah, and the Swedenborg's one of his primary goals, you know, in sort of spiritual rebirth or regeneration, is to come to realize that things don't necessarily originate in you. That to stop taking ownership of everything, like, oh, this is my anger, this is my, not to not take responsibility for it, but to say this is flowing through me, but just to make that distinction that, okay, this is something I can accept or reject. There's a lot for the ability, at least for me, to kind of differentiate myself from that. And it makes you feel a little bit like, okay, wait, I don't want to be working for these guys. You know, it sort of gives you extra motivation to push harmful things away. So thanks, Mark, for that. All right, let's get to our next question. This is from Ivy. Do we get to recognize those we once lived with when we reunite? And this is from Facebook. And that would be reuniting in the life after death. And I would say, based on, you know, a large body of experiences, Swedenborg's included, yes. We did talk last week about how what we look like gradually changes in the afterlife, that your spirit comes to look like an image of who you really are inside. Yet he does talk about people meeting up in the next life, recognizing each other. And Pete, you've probably read, you know, near-death experiences and all that, where people say, I've met my grandmother. She looked young and great, but they still knew it was her. So it seems to me that yeah, we do get that kind of reuniting. Does that sort of jive with what you've read?
Yeah, I think we do recognize them, although spiritually, I think over time, especially someone who has been in that state for a long period of time, we may not recognize them immediately. But if we had an affection similar to the affections we had when we were on this earth, I think we would recognize them. I've had some, my mother died when I was very young, and I've had a number of times in the dream world. And it seemed, there are dreams I have which seem very much an ordinary dream, and there's other dreams that seem a little more than that. And a couple of times I've seen my mother. She's very young. It isn't so much a physical experience, but there was an immediate recognition of not only her, but also in re-experiencing of our relationship in a much improved manner. So I think we recognize each other, but the true qualities we had may gradually be changing over time, and we may be attracted to qualities of other people that we thought were in our friends, and we find our friends are different than we had thought they were in this earth. So this more interior way of experiencing each other, you start to recognize there are things going on with people we may not have known about on earth, and we don't recognize that part of them as it manifests.
Yeah, so kind of the lasting connection in the afterlife has to be, you know, with kind of you share values or share something that's deeper. And I appreciate you sharing that experience with your mom and in dreams. And I always like to hear people's experiences of any kind. And it makes me think of, you know, how in dreams, I'm sure everybody watching has this, that you can say, oh yeah, we were at my house. It didn't look like my house, but I knew it was my house. Or yeah, we saw so and so. They didn't look like that. You can very much know what you're dealing with in dreams, even if externally it appears differently. I wonder if some of that recognition you were talking about, Peter, was like that. So let's take another question. All right, looks like we got two that are about a similar subject. The first is from SF Will. These are from YouTube. Are there other animals in the spirit world or just humans? and from Autumn Gray. Do you believe animals are equally important to God as humans? Obviously, in some ways, we have more restraint. But in other ways, I believe animals are better than us. Thanks for those questions. So one thing I want to say is the idea of something being more important or less important to God, you know, would sort of seem like God only has so much love and care to go around. I would say, you know, with the God Swedenborg describes and the God that I would think would be God, there's an infinite supply of love and wisdom. So everything is being fully attended to as much as it possibly can, you know. That whole sometimes animals can be better than us. I do think, like, you know, if a person hurts somebody or harms one, it's like, oh, that's a bad person. But if a bear does it, you'd think, oh, it's just being a bear, you know. So, you know, Peter, have you read that in Swedenborg where he talks about that because we kind of have the choice to do things, to intentionally be cruel, whereas animals are just going by instinct or by a more immediate reaction, that we can actually, as Autumn was saying, be worse than animals in a way.
Yeah, I definitely think we can take what God gives us, which is his love, and his love is supposed to go out and make others happy. And we're meant to be experiencing that as our heaven, which we're created for. But if we take that love and turn it towards ourselves, then we have this opposite reaction to other people. Rather than wish to do well to them, we wish to hurt them or protect ourselves by hurting them. And animals, I don't believe, have that. You know, if a lion is eating something, he isn't being cruel. He isn't being vindictive. He's just eating something to support his family. I've been watching YouTube. One of the favorite YouTubes I watch are the animal ones, where you can see how much affection these animals have, not only for their owners, but often for each other. Amazing ones recently about a raccoon taking care of a cat, scratching him and so forth. And for me, I'm getting to see love in a finite form. The finite form happens to be an animal rather than a human. And I think we are somewhat different than we can reflect. So there's a kind of heaven and a kind of spirituality that we can experience that animals can't. But God is love, and love is life, and animals are alive and expressing those loves. So they certainly are in their heaven, whether they could be in the same heaven we're talking about, which takes some discernment and understanding and recognition of a sort of a mental state. I'm not sure about that. Don't know.
Yeah, and I recently saw a video of a pig saving a goat. Did you see that one? It was like a goat is in the water. And yeah, so everybody's kind of like, oh, you know, there's too many cat videos on the internet, but they're all amazing. You know, like there's this goat who's in the water and that's my goat impression. He can't swim. He's not having a good time. And I guess the dude who owns him, had a pig around also. And you can hear him talking to the pig. He's like, go out. And this pig just goes out in the water and like pushes the goat over towards the shallow part, gets him out, and then just runs out. It's incredible. Right. So animals are cool. Is my point there. And also the first question was, are there other animals in the spiritual world? Short answer, yes. Swedenborg describes that world as packed with animals, and of all kinds, and some that we don't even get the pleasure of seeing in this world. All right. So those are a couple questions. If you want your questions or comments to be up, just make them. Put them on the YouTube comments there. We'll get them up. We'll have a couple more times for that before we're done. So let's get back to the PDF. We are in the middle of the paragraph here. We even, and this is Swedenborg talking about what we take with us to the next life. We even take with us our earthly memory, since we retain everything we have heard, seen, read, learned, or thought in the world from the earliest infancy to the very end of life. But since the earthly objects that reside in our memory are beyond our power to retrieve in a world that is spiritual, they become dormant there the way they do when we are not thinking about them. They can, however, be retrieved when it so pleases the Lord. But I will have more to say soon about the earthly memory and its condition after death. And the way that I see this, and Pete, I'd love to hear if you think of it in the same way, is that here our memory is kind of staying with us the whole time. We're kind of haunted by it. You know, past events are always popping into the consciousness. You know, it's very hard not to ruminate on them. But there it almost seems like the storage system is better. And, you know, you can access memory, but it's not, it doesn't happen involuntary. There's less of going over the past. Does that seem to ring true?
Well, I think for me, a lot of going back into my memory and back into the past and even into the future are personal concerns, so personal sense of presence. And I think when you get in the spiritual world, gradually you're relieved of that personal way of viewing everything. It's all about me, or how does it impact on me? And you're freed from that, so that whatever resources are in your memory or in your mind or in your emotions, they can be utilized if they're needed at that time for a positive reason. But I don't believe we go back anymore just feeling guilty or shame or embarrassed or anything like that. Those things have been made quiescent, and we'll really be free to express good emotions and good loves. But just like going into your workshop, you may not have used Sawzall for many, many years, but if you have a need for it, you can go get it and oil it and use it. And I think when we have a need for a memory, if it serves, then it would be available to us. But since we're in a spiritual world, most of the natural memories aren't going to be used very much. But if there's need for that, then they are available.
Yeah, and I think I'd take that. You know, I've spent a lot of time going over memories, and it's not very productive. Like, it never makes me feel like, oh, I'm so glad I thought about that for a couple hours.
It would be available to us, but since...
All right, so we're going to return to the text. If you're just joining us, we're on page 30 of Swedenborg's Our Life After Death. And feel free to leave your questions and comments just in the comment section there, and we'll try to... We want to talk about what you guys want to talk about and also learn from you. You know, I'm not an expert on anything, I feel like, and certainly not the life after death. So I want to hear all kinds of things from you guys. So very much appreciate the questions so far. So let's get back into our PDF. People who are focused on their senses, and I just want to hover over this phrase for a second. Swedenborg often talks about this, and it kind of has a connotation beyond what it sounds like. Sort of superficial might be a good word to describe it. Your focus on external things, and that's kind of where it starts and ends for you. So he brings this up a lot. They're one of the characters. And I want to say, Pete, that while you're here, you had kind of – I think I got this idea initially from you, this idea that whenever he's talking about, oh, people that who do this, people who do that, really, I mean, and that can exist in any of us, right? It's not just like, oh, there's certain people who are like this.
Yeah, I guess my own personal point of view is, why would Scripture, or why would God through Scriptures or Revelation be talking to me about other people? Why would he talk to me about people who are selfless if I'm selfish, or talk to me about selfish people if I'm selfless? I don't believe he wants to gossip. So I believe he's really talking to me about various states within myself. And I'm a microcosm. I have all sorts of states. And any state that exists in the external world in a small way exists in myself. So I can go from being very happy and content, and suddenly I spill something on myself, I can go into anger. So there are parts of me that are totally focused on the senses. So my natural corporeal part of me, which is only part of who I am, I'm also spiritual, I'm also mental, I'm psychological, but the natural body seeks pleasure and avoids pain. And that part of me is incapable of looking at or focusing on spiritual things, because it has only natural concerns. But that isn't the totality of who I am or anybody else. So he's really talking to me about states within myself that can't be elevated, so that I don't waste my time trying to elevate my natural mind into spirituality. But I start to turn and find there are also spiritual parts of me that have interest in things other than the interest of my natural corporeal body.
Yeah, and to think of it that way, you know, to think of, okay, these are all states that I could potentially be in or am sometimes, yeah, if I bump my head on something or I spill something, then that's it, you know. And that, because back to what we were talking about initially with heaven and usefulness, that if we're reading in that way, we're looking at things in ourselves, there's a use to that. We can work on ourselves and do that. If we're just thinking of, oh yeah, look at these people are like this, haha, like that's not helping anything. And interestingly, Swedenborg says that angels don't accuse people. Like they like to put a good interpretation on things. It's actually the negative spirits that love to accuse people of evil and stuff. So anyway, I just felt like that was worth taking a look at. So we kept our mindset good through here. So people who are focused on their senses are quite incapable of believing that our state after death is like this, because they can't conceive of such a thing. Such people can think only on the material level, even about spiritual matters. And if we're thinking about it as a state, like you were just mentioning, that really applies there, because I find that I fluctuate through like times of thinking, oh, this is all very plausible. You know, I do think there's a life after death. It seems to be how, and there are other times I'm like, I don't know, there's anything. Life is pointless. You know, you definitely notice that you go deeper in and you go way out to the periphery in states. And it's just good to kind of differentiate those. Do not sense, that is anything they do not see with their physical eyes and touch with their hands, they say does not exist, as we read of Thomas in John 20, 25, 27, 29. And so there, Swedenborg is referencing the scripture, and he, to get into his sort of treatment of the Bible and what he sees in there, and the symbolism is a whole another, you know, 1,000 shows that he wrote volumes and volumes after that. But in brief, that there's a symbolism to everything. So the Thomas in there is talking again about these states that we can have or that we can fall into. So let's get back to some questions. I know you guys probably have some thoughts on the whole thing. Any of you want to leave a question or a comment, just do so on YouTube below there, or go to Facebook, wherever you found this video. We'll try to find it and put it up, because we love hearing what you have to say.
So Bryce, you being a Christian and you talking about God all the time, how does that fit into your theology?
It was interesting. I particularly liked the part where they were talking about the influence of these attachments, where it was like making people have the urge to like pass by a store and buy something or do something like that. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week with the archons, which also in Christianity we often refer to as demons, and the, you know, just the influence that they have over our lives and the dark forces. And so it's really pretty interesting, because most of the religions kind of line up on a lot of this stuff. They just call it different names and refer to it differently.
And what do different religions call these things, like jinn in Irania?
Iran? Yeah, in the Muslim religions and the offshoots, jinns. And I mean, I will use the example of, you know, of the Bible, you know, it teaches, this is one example, it's different than what we're talking about, but it teaches, you know, basically the golden rule to treat others as the way you want to be treated. And other religions, you know, it's, you know, the Buddhists, they believe in karma, and the Hindus believe in a form of karma. It's just this underlying principle that, and these underlying principles seem to be in most of the religions. And the dark forces, whatever you want to call them, whatever your religion is, or even if you don't have a religion, but there's still just, you know, it's the same name, but it's the same thing, just different names and maybe different belief, a little bit different beliefs on how they work or how much they can influence. But it's really interesting.
And what does it say in Ephesians about the spiritual realm? Ephesians what?
Yeah, that's a good question. But we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities.
Against, so the spiritual world is very much more lively than this physical realm.
Yeah, and it's all around us everywhere we go. We can't see it. Some of us can feel it. Some of us are more adept than others at feeling it. And each person kind of has if they're sensitive to such things, each person can be sensitive to different things. I mean, I'm sensitive in a way that a lot of people aren't, that can be very uncomfortable for me at times, but...
And then there could be walk-ins or poltergeists or other activities that people are experiencing in their lives and are afraid to talk about.
Yeah, and the poltergeist is kind of interesting because usually that gets tied to a child in the home. But is that the child itself manifesting it, or is it something attached to that child manifesting it?
And more people are experiencing possessions as well, walk-ins and possessions of spiritual attachments that are placed on them due to many people who are leaving the planet right now. Some of them are remaining in spirit, but on the planet. Others are going above the planet.
And it's, yeah, we're at a time right now where there's just so many dying, and they're dying, you know, now with war, people are dying violent deaths, which always said to make it harder for people to pass on. But then if you look at COVID, which no matter what you feel about the disease, a lot of people were who were not planning on it were getting sick and dying unexpectedly. And it's not where you have a long, drawn-out battle with cancer and you know your time is coming and you can make peace with it. With COVID, people were getting sick really quickly, and no matter what it may be, people were getting sick really quickly and being in a coma and not being awake and aware of their stuff. So they were not able to reconcile themselves to whatever their belief system was and that they're dying and, you know, they need to make peace in this life. So you could imagine that these people that were in those situations, you know, when they passed on, that they're very confused and not sure what's going on. And
then the suicide rates have gone up. I mean, I've heard of several in the last, which is very weird because I don't usually hear that of that many, in the last 2 months. And
yeah,
it seems that, you know, what the government's doing, which is so evil, is causing people to get fed up and lose hope and give up.
It is, and it's so much of what the government has done over the past 2 years has been horrible, between the injections and forcing people to stay at home, forcing people not to go to their jobs, and forcing businesses to close. And then you look at also the injections, which all of these young people that are having these heart issues all of a sudden and dropping dead, which that's not normal. So are they also spirits that are not at rest and, you know, very disturbed because they're not even close to living out what would normally be their natural lifespan, but because of the inflammation of the heart and stuff, all these young kids that are, many of them athletes that are, you know, well in shape and very cardio conditioned, you know, in good shape, better than any of us, most of us at least, you know, they're dropping dead well before their time, and that's got to be a restless spirit too, I would think.
Yes, and sometimes with the spirits that have faced that type of loss, sometimes they're more earthbound and remain on the earth. Because there's spirits everywhere. There's spirits all around us. Ghosts, spirits, angels and demons on this planet. Also animal spirits.
Yes. And I've felt some animal spirits in the past, not here recently, but, and so I definitely believe in the animal spirits, but it's just really troubling times for so many people. And with so much bad in the world right now, we're seeing all these rises in violent crimes. And, you know, just yesterday they finally caught the guy who had been, he lives in Washington, D.C., and he had been murdering homeless people in Washington, D.C. and New York City. I believe it's New York City, may have been Manhattan, but, and he's, you know, he's a serial killer that's targeting the most vulnerable. Well, children are the most vulnerable, but otherwise homeless people are very vulnerable in our society, and just walking up to them and killing them. And
this is happening right now?
Well, they just arrested him yesterday. Finally, they caught him, and it's, you know, it, when the D.C. police started putting some pictures, because some of the cameras had caught the guy, and they're posting pictures of him online and stuff and asking people to be on the lookout. New York City, the police department had seen the pictures, and they were like, okay, this resembles the guy we've got some picture security camera pictures of, and, you know, we really need to find him because this is a serial killer that's targeting two different areas. Now, I did not explore the story enough to know how he was getting back and forth to New York, whether he's taking the train or he was taking the drive, which the traffic would be horrible. So you really, either way, you're dedicating a lot of time to just go kill people in two different states.
So this person was killing people in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And where else?
New York City.
That's a distance, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's a couple of hours. I've never taken the train, but I think it's like maybe 2 hours by train or so.
So what was his motivation to be killing people of these two different areas, and how many people did he kill?
I don't know the answers to either of those yet, and I think they're still exploring. You know, they're going to be questioning him, trying to find out what his reasons were, but I don't know that they've actually got an accurate total, because they're going to have to go back and look at a lot of these people that ended up dead and see if maybe they weren't, you know, victims of him too. But it's,
yeah, and that's just one out of many. I mean, he's the one that's been caught, but a lot of people, males and females, and even teenagers, are really getting into doing crimes like that right now. And we'll be right back. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
You're going back in?
There's still men out there. I go home. People ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. Freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
Hi, I'm Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? foreclosure, and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen, learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1, Mission 1, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated annulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two swerving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-voloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
From Z to Infinity with my co-host Bryce, and we're discussing, and we'll be discussing after we listen to some more videos, that people think that this is all there is this physical plane. When we pass away, there is other aspects to eternity, infinity, and I have a poem to read right now. Let's see here. We have a chat room at freedomslips.com. And Bryce, would you like to put in the bumper for the show?
Yes. We're 100% listener supported, and that means nobody here gets paid, none of the hosts, none of the staff. And the only way we survive is from donations from the listeners. And there are lots of ways you can donate. You can go to the website freedomslips.com, and you can donate by Patreon and have a recurring donation every month. And there's direct payments for North American people to come out of your bank account or whatever. You can donate. There's special things for people in foreign countries, donor box. We've got three different kinds of cryptocurrency we accept. And if you want to just send a check or money order the old-fashioned way, you can send one to Revolution Radio and address it to Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Ackerman, A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N, at 1793 North Eden, E-D-O-N, Road in Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, and the zip code is 49227. And for those who do not know, her name is in the chat room is Lady Horse, and she is the one who at this point owns Revolution Radio completely. So that's why you send the money orders and stuff, checks to her, if anybody is wondering. And we also have a wonderful Zazzle store that you can go to freedomslips.com and click on store. And there's all kinds of merchandise you can order. And actually today they're having a 20% off site-wide sale. So you can get 20% off anything right now using the coupon code SPRINGSALE22. And today is the last day for that sale. So anything you get, you can get 20% off, and you still support Revolution Radio. And I think Thomas put some new in the one chat room. He put some new designs up. I don't know if they've made it on the shirts yet, but we have all kinds of wonderful designs to choose from. And if you want something that's not listed, you can pick on the design you like a coffee cup, and you can scroll down to the bottom of the page, and it will let you apply that to merchandise that we do not officially have listed in our store, but you can put it on anything from, you know, you can put it on chili mugs or soup bowls and all kinds of different stuff. So please consider supporting us.
All right. Well, thank you. And here's a poem, Whispering in Our Ears. As if we didn't have enough to worry about, we've got these invisible evil spirits roaming about, whispering in our ears. Most can't hear them. I can hear them now. Much to my dismay, I was messing with the EVP. Do you know what an EVP is?
If you're asking me, that's the electronic voice phenomenon.
Correct. And do you know what it does?
Yes, and that's been a point of contention with many people over the years, and I've got to side with Art Bell that a lot of the equipment they're using should not be needed for that. But yes, you get all kinds of interesting things picked up on tape just by leaving a tape recorder going when you walk into a room. And I think personally the old-fashioned tape recorders work much better than the digital ones. But when I was with the Patriot Brigade Radio Network, we did a few shows on that. They did, and it was amazing when some of the stuff was really cleaned up with audio processing and made a lot clearer what you were hearing. It was pretty interesting.
And so if somebody was interested in doing an EVP, how would they go about doing that?
There's a lot of different belief systems with that. Some people are diehard using the digital equipment now. Art Bell was always that, you know, the tape recorders were better, and that because of the way tape recorders work, that you don't really need to hook a microphone up to it. But either way if you did or didn't. But
so they need to have an older style, a little reel-to-reel, older-fashioned tape recorder?
Yeah. The bright side is cassette tapes have made a comeback, but the only thing available now for the recorders and the players are like really for the hat, you know, the little small portable are unfortunately like cheap quality ones, but those should still work good enough to do recordings with, and you can always clean up the audio later.
And what do they do?
You just get it, and if you think there's a presence or something in the room, you get it, and you just turn it on and be quiet.
Like if they've noticed things moving around and maybe nobody else has moved them around and it could be maybe a spirit or a poltergeist that's moving items around, let's say in their living room or, you know, kitchen or bedroom or wherever.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, if you have a feeling when you go into that room, and a lot of people coincide with using digital thermometers to point at an area and see if there's any temperature variations in one spot or the other. And there's also, this is a little more quirky, but some people will use these little meters that will pick up electromagnetic waves or patterns in the air. And I've made some of those for people in the past years ago. But now you can readily buy them on Amazon for probably like $20 to $30. But it's, I mean, there's just a bunch of different devices to do it. But the problem is some people may not want to mess with that or may not be prepared for what they might be getting.
Well, they can get spiritual attachments that way, or walk-ins, which we'll be discussing a little bit later. But anyway, with this poem, whispering in our ears, and it doesn't say who it's from. As if we didn't have enough to worry about, we've got these invisible evil spirits roaming about, whispering in our ears. Most can't hear them. I can hear them now. A lot of people are open to listening to spirits. Some people call them dead people, but are open and have, ever since they were children, the ability to hear and dead people, you know, spirits. Since I can hear them now, much to my dismay, I was messing around with an EVP, and in the recordings, these voices wouldn't stay. It was like they were already there, roaming about, looking to interfere, looking to bring us down. As if there isn't enough in the world to deal with, we don't need them roaming about, being sneaky and convincing in a most cladistic way, whispering in our ears, and most don't even realize. So we have spirits all around us, animal spirits, human, I don't know, angels and demons.
Yeah, I mean, usually there's good and evil, and it's just, it seems that most of the stuff that lingers around seems to not always be evil. A lot of it is just confused and doesn't know, for whatever happened to them, it was sudden, and they don't know what they're supposed to do, or they're confused about where they're supposed to go.
Okay, so I'm going to play some more of this video.
All right, so the first one is from YouTube. Jack, does Swedenborg make a distinction between spirits and angels? Could an angel be confused and think he, she is alive? Thank you very much. I would. My initial thought is no, an angel could not be confused, because the differentiation between spirits and angels is one of mindset, that an angel is a person like you or I who has opened enough that God has brought enlightenment and whatever you want to call it. This is a better grasp of what's really going on with life and opening up to kindness, everything that makes the mind thrive. So you would think someone who's in the angelic mindset wouldn't be in that sort of obscurity. Although he does say that even angels, you know, go through seasons like we all do, and they have sometimes when they're in a dimmer light, you know. So, Pete, do you have anything to add to that?
Not much. Sometimes I think angels are so much in the present moment, and what they love and what they believe and what they're doing is one, and that's their very life. So they're not so much wrapped up in time and space. So the very thought, am I living or am I in the world or am I in heaven? I think that probably that kind of thinking doesn't occur to them a whole lot because there's so much in the stream of living. One definition of use is love in action. And we are a form of God's love, a unique form of his affection. And when that's acting, I think often those kind of thoughts aren't taking place because they're one with their love. Whereas earlier on, when I have various concerns of self, that's more apt to happen in my own thinking. Well, how am I doing and where am I and have I died or am I in the present world? I think that part of my mind will have those thoughts, but the higher part, the angelic part, I'm just guessing probably doesn't have that kind of thinking going on, the kind of thinking that we often involve ourselves in.
Yeah, well, it makes me think of that he says that, yeah, heaven has this component of usefulness to it, and that sort of the mindset on the one side is, okay, what's going on with me? Where am I? What's happening with me? The other mindset, this sort of angelic one, is how can I help? What can I do here to help? And that would kind of, yeah, let you dwell on those sorts of things less. So anyway, thanks for the comment. Let's get to this is from Rafi. This is from YouTube. I have a spirit lover. She doesn't hurt me and helps me grow toward the light. I have other spirits who protect me and my children. I have quite a few times. But how do these things fit into a Swedenborgian worldview? Well, I think that they fit well. I mean, Swedenborg was up until his 50-somethings relatively like everyone else in that he, you know, was just seeing and hearing and experiencing what was going on in the physical world. But then he had this opening of, or he called it opening of his spiritual eyes or spiritual senses, and suddenly he was confronted by the constant presence of the spiritual world and of spirits there. So he would be in conversation with spirits. He would be seeing spirits at times, even while going through the normal activities of his daily life. He didn't have to be, you know, meditating or something. It was always present to him. So he was constantly in relationship with spirits. And it sort of sounds like what was being described in this comment here. And Pete, do you have any thoughts on the closeness of the spiritual and physical world as Swedenborg and others describe it?
Yeah, I think what the questioner had brought up is we are very close to and involved with spirits. And in fact, that's their use. A great deal of their use is to be of help and protection to people who are still in the natural physical world. I'll even take it down. I'm going outside and suddenly I realize, oh, you forgot to get your towel. You're going swimming. And I just send a thank you to whatever spirit suddenly reminded me to go get the towel. We're surrounded by spirits all the time. Our focus happens to be on the natural, but we're in conversation and being influenced by spirits. That is our thinking and our affectional life. So I certainly think we have friends there, and I don't know about lover. I don't know quite how I experience that. But, yeah, I think there's a very intimate relationship, and we're living it every moment. And we have a lot more friends and a lot more influences than just the physical friends or fellowship we have in this earth.
Yeah, man. So that's good. Just knowing that my popularity goes up, you know, I have more friends than I think I do. So I have maybe like 3 or 4 total friends or something. All right. So do we have another question? Yeah, we're going to take one more. Death for Us says, when people on YouTube, when people in the afterlife see us in this realm, do we look like ghosts dead to them? Do we freak them out? Which is a fair question because a lot of people get freaked out by them. So the one thing that comes to mind for me is Swedenborg says, as we were talking about earlier in the show, it's just funny to think about, like,
spirit saying, do you think humans really exist? I swear I saw a human this one time. I didn't see one. That was just like the light in your cat. No, it was, anyway, then Swedenborg describes that we're dual citizens, right? Like we have a spirit and a body. And that normally, he says, our spirit is not visible, or that our spirit is in a community with other spirits. So just like, you know, you might be in some city here, that your spirit is there with other spirits there, but normally they can't really see you. But he says that when you're deep in thought and your kind of external concerns have gone away, you can become visible there. But you're a little different. He says, you just kind of walk along deep in thought. You're not really responding. When someone talks to you, you disappear. That's what he says. Pete, do you have any thoughts on the on us appearing to them and what they think of us, etc.?
Yeah, I don't believe they see us with their spiritual eyes, and that's what they have. But I think Swedenborg has said, I have my own personal experiences, they can on occasion actually see through another human's eyes and then see humans in the natural plane using someone else's eyes. Like I said, my mother died when I was very young. I've had some experiences of having a feeling that she is looking at me through this other person's eyes. And that's a very strong feeling, and I can't really explain that. But Swedenborg talks about that on occasion that's permitted. I think when they see you in that situation, they actually do see you as a human being because they're seeing through human eyes, even though they're spiritual.
Yeah, and then it's all got to happen through a mechanism that sort of like this world that we live in is so system driven that you can't, like, for us to have this online broadcast, we have to have a lot of machinery that's really precise. And luckily we got it all barely working for today. There's a lot of systems. So for that kind of connection to happen, I mean, the systems have to be in place. You know, it can't just be like, okay, here you go. You can see something. I had another thought about that. Oh yeah, Swedenborg describes spirits being able to see through his eyes and wanting to tell their loved ones, you know, like, hey, I'm here, you know, I'm okay, you know, and that's I think what a lot of people on the other side want to tell us. And it's all right, it's okay. All right, so let's get back to the text at the bottom of page 30. Nevertheless, the difference between our life in the spiritual world and our life in the material world is considerable. With respect both to our outer senses and the way they affect us, and to our inner senses and the way they affect us. People who are in heaven are far more sensitive mentally. That is, they see and hear and also think more discerningly than when they were in this world. This is because they are seeing in heaven's light, which vastly surpasses the world's light, and they hear by way of a spiritual atmosphere that vastly surpasses the atmosphere of the earth. Now, when he talks about heaven's light, there's this thing that he brings up, correspondences, or that's, you know, phenomena in this world all are sort of reflections of a deeper reality in the other world, and we'll be taking a look at that at the end of the show. But so when he talks about heaven's light, that actually is a force that is allowing you to understand in the spiritual world, so that once it's not just like that here what light does for our eyes, that I, because these lights are on in this room, I can see things much more clearly. In heaven, light allows understanding in much a much clearer way. Is that kind of how you read his thing on heaven's light, Pete?
Yeah, I guess I take it that's what they mean by being enlightened in regard to something. The experience is an aha experience. And often we say, you know, when someone finally expresses something or explains something to us that we've been struggling with and we finally get it, the synapses, made, that's when we say, oh, I see. Well, we didn't see physically. We were enlightened. There is a light around the understanding that enlightened what we were struggling with, and we say we see it. So I see the light that he talks about in that way. There's much more clarity to understanding ourselves and others in community than there is when we're all wrapped up in day-to-day concerns of the natural body and natural mind.
Yeah, and that's another sort of way that we're in both worlds at the same time, because the way he's describing it, when you get these realizations, these aha moments, that actually is your spirit receiving sort of this light from the other side. So let's take a look at the end of this paragraph here. The difference this makes to their outer senses is as great as the difference we see in a material world between clear skies and the obscurity of a cloud, or between noonday light and the dimness of evening. And so I think what he's saying here in the difference this makes to their outer senses is that because of the inner light they receive there, the outer way that they experience the spiritual world is a lot sharper and a lot clearer. So the whole thing, you know, you get people saying, oh, it was so much more vivid, more real there. So I heard somebody who had an experience say, like, this world is like a comic book, you know, compared to that one. And so I think it's because of these spiritual senses being so heightened that seems more real.
And so when we leave our body, and many of us, you know, do leave our body at night for out-of-body experiences, OBE, and even people in comas and things like that, they've left their body. I mean, even though that they're there, and that's happened to me with my dad and also with my first husband that was in a coma, but they've left their body, but their spirit's floating around and can go visit other people and other things, and people that are sensitive can see these spirits.
And I think what was interesting to me about what we just listened to is that, you know, he was relating how, like, going to the pool and he forgot his towel, and he's hearing a spirit voice, you know, voice telling him, reminding him, you know, grab your towel. And I think we've all had that happen to us at times, where it's like a lot of people will call it their inner voice or something, and Christians will call it, you know, the Holy Spirit reminding them. But it's one of those things that's kind of universal, no matter what the religion or lack thereof, that people experience that. They get that little reminder that's, okay, you need to do this or you should do this.
And sometimes people see shadow people and shadow animals, and that's a form of spirits as well. Some people say that shadow animals or shadow people are like unidentified extraterrestrials or something. But a lot of times, in a lot of cases, it's a person that has passed on or an animal that's passed on, that they're that you can see their shadow.
Yeah, I've never experienced shadow people before, but I've had some, you know, interesting things happen not too long ago, but I wasn't seeing any shadow people.
What experience that happened a long time ago?
Well,
a while ago.
It kind of goes along with what he was saying about, you know, getting that reminder for something. But it's after my wife died, and I was having to go through the house and her stuff. And we had only been together 6 years, but she had lived there for like 25 years. So I would get just something would pop into my head that, you know, go over here and look in this place. And I was it's like she was sending messages to me, because I was finding things that she had bought and put up long before she knew me. And, you know, they would have a little message on it that would say something and be, you know, move on, like live your life. And even the last day I was at there was a lot of that. And it was just things that, like I said, I didn't know that existed. And I'd get the urge to go to a certain area, and it's like, okay, what are you trying to show me? What do you want me to look at? Is it this box? Something? Okay, it's this box. And I look, and there's something in there with a message. And even the last day I went there, I was going we had two houses, and I was going in the old house that we were moving everything out of to the new one. And I was going on her desk, and I was grabbing a couple of things, and something just fell from up on the one shelf. And it's on my fridge right here, and it just says, "Live your dreams, love your life." You know, and she had always, you know, wanted me to, if something happened to her, to move on and, you know, start a new life. And it's just, you know, we get these messages from people that passed on, and sometimes people may not recognize them for what it is, but, you know, I've certainly experienced that here recently.
And so people should be more sensitive to this.
Yeah, and this is something that's new to me. I'm sensitive to, like, other things, but this was a new experience for me.
And in many locations, there's higher spiritual activities, like in some churches or cathedrals or certain areas, like where the Civil War took place.
Yeah, I've actually camped out on the battlefield at Gettysburg during reenactments, and that is probably one of the most troubled sleeps I've ever had, because you basically bivouac out in tents like in the old days, and there is a lot of spirits and presence there, and there's just a lot of odd feeling things that go on, and people say they can see things and some hear things, but there's a lot of people that died violent deaths. And some died violent, lingering deaths because of infection and battlefield treatments for stuff. And it's, you know, it was a really uncomfortable place to be, especially sleeping. It's like you wish, you know, in my case, it was my grandfather, but I wish my grandfather had been there so I could sleep better, you know, just because, you know, you're an adult. But it's like, okay, this is a little scary. It's getting creeped out.
And so this is natural, and a lot of people, especially in Western society of the United States, I mean, United States and other countries, it's more natural that people know that there's spirit beings and that there's life after this physical existence. And more people are witnessing that now with more spiritual activities and things like that, but some people still think that it's abnormal, but it isn't abnormal. It's actually normal.
Yeah, it really is, and it's, you know, just different people are just so sensitive to different things, but some people are just so scared to, because it may be outside their belief system, or they may not believe in such things, and they may shrug it off, but there's too many people seeing and feeling things to, you know, for it not to be real and for people just to be making it up, because nobody wants to, especially when you're an adult. I mean, as a kid, you make stuff up maybe to get attention, but as an adult, you don't want the kind of attention making something up would get you.
And since we live in a physical plane, but yet we only use how many senses do we use? Five?
Yeah, I mean, they go back and forth on that. I think some people don't even use that many, but
What are our senses?
Hearing, seeing, touch, and you've kind of lost me. I'm a long time out of school.
Hearing,
and
taste and smell.
Yeah, smell.
But there's other senses beyond that. That's just in the physical realm.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, it's really interesting because some people just don't recognize it when they get that little weird feeling, or it's like the tingling up their spine. They're not sure what it is, or they just shrug it off and think it's their imagination.
Or they feel that their hair is sticking up or something, or they feel a cold touch on them.
Yeah. Yes, and it's like, back in Maryland when I had to put my one cat to sleep, I felt him, my cat Jonah, and it was like several nights after he died, you know, was put to sleep because he was terminally ill, and he would jump up. I could feel him just like he would normally do, jump up on the bed, walk to his spot, come up beside me where he would normally lick my face, and then he'd go back and lay down, and I could feel him doing that. And I finally told him, Jonah, you know, if you want to go and go on, it's okay. You don't have to keep coming back here. But he did for a couple more nights, and then he went on. And, you know, I always told him it was okay that if he went on, he didn't have to stay. But, you know, it's, you know, animals, you know, people feel animals do that, and it's...
And I've had a dog do that to me. I took my wiener dog, my Dapple wiener dog, camping with me to Montana with my son. And I'm not, you know, we were going to stay for 2 weeks, but we decided that we would go camp in Libby instead of up by the mountains and stream by Catspell. And the way back to Libby, Montana, I don't know if he drank my wine and that was, you know, that I had in the car or what my dog did, but he was only 2 years old and a teacher at the school gave him to me. And so he was a healthy young dog. But when my son and I came out of the restaurant and started driving, I was, you know, using my drums and also singing some songs and saying how wonderful it would be to die out here because it was so beautiful. And so when I touched my dog that was on my son's lap, a big spark came through me from above. Like, you know, I was driving my vehicle, but a big spark came through me and went right through me and in through my hand and went out, and it felt like it hit my dog, Vinny. And so I was driving a little bit further, looking out how beautiful it was and a beautiful place to, you know, be buried. And so a few minutes later, my dog died on my son's lap. And so I've never seen a dog pass away before or anything like that. Neither has my son. And so I stopped and parked the vehicle and dug a hole out by the pine tree by the river and buried my dog. And then I could hear him whining and crying. And it was very odd because I could hear my dog for actually a couple of weeks until it disappeared. But hearing him whining and barking and crying, and it was like he was stuck in between the physical realm and the spiritual realm.
Yeah, and that's just really common. Now, I had my six cats I had to have put to sleep. I'm lost track now, I guess, early November, late October, and it was very traumatic, and it was an unfortunate situation out here in the country. You cannot find any shelters. You could not find anybody to rehome them. And the apartment I'm having to move into would not allow any pets. And I was only able to rehome the one cat. So six of them, unfortunately, had to be put to sleep. And this is the first time I've ever had to put an animal to sleep that was not sick and dying, where you're easing its pain and suffering. And I'm going to move off that topic now because I'm starting to get choked up. But, you know, they were our babies and loved them dearly. And they were all, you know, rescues that people had dropped off at our house, you know, out in the yard somewhere. And we rescued and raised them from they were babies and completely babied them and spoiled them.
And so did you feel their spirit once you were put to sleep?
I would love to be able to say yes, but I didn't in this instance. And just because of the expenses involved, I only had one private cremation for one of them, and she's on my headboard, and I do talk to her every day, just as I did when she was alive. I'd go in the room and talk to her, and just all the time talking to her. So it's just, I've continued that, but it's, I don't know, it's just a different situation, I think. I think they had a hard time because they don't know what was wrong or why they had to go away. And I'd like to give a real quick shout out to the people in chat that are actually active in chat. And that's May Street and my brother Crow and Navy and my really, really good buddy and bro Comet. And Ahmad is somewhere in there somewhere. He may be listening. And we also have a really special person listening who cannot get into the chat room anymore, and that would be Lizzie. So, hi, Lizzie. We love you.
All right. So let's pick it back up here. This is the last paragraph we'll be getting through today. Of course, you guys are welcome to read on or catch up on any past episodes. You know, you don't need us taking you through, but hopefully this is making it fun. And I always find that the more it's discussed, the more it becomes accessible. So that's why I also really appreciate the questions and the comments that you guys have been contributing today, and we'll get to a few more of those before we're done. But let's take a look at the end of this gigantic paragraph that takes up nearly this whole page and some of the page before. Because the light of heaven is divine truth, it enables angels to notice and distinguish between even the smallest things by sight. And just flying by this, but he writes a whole book almost on the light of heaven being divine truth, and that this is part of what God is giving out in the spiritual world, and there's all this power in it and this potential. So there's a whole rabbit hole to go down there, but we'll just speed by it right now. Furthermore, their outer sight corresponds to their inner sight, their understanding. So inner sight and understanding are the same thing. Since for angels, each sight flows into the other and they act as a single faculty. This is why both the outer sight of angels and their inner vision are so sharp. Their hearing corresponds in a similar way to their higher perception, which is a function of both their understanding and their will. So in the tone and words of others, angels pick up the slightest shadings of the speaker's emotion and thought, shadings of emotion in the tone and shadings of thought in the words. And Swedenborg describes that angels can know from one word everything about what kind of person you are, and that there's just this because they have this perception that's so tight, they can get that. Pete, did you have any final thoughts on this inner and outer sight before we move to our last question segment?
Well, I just repeat, I believe the spiritual world, or the world we're talking about, is the world of thought and affections. And the affections, Swedenborg refers to as the celestial world, and the thoughts, which are forms of affection, he refers to as the spiritual world. And when you're in that world, and that surrounds you, and all of your living is in that world, then when we talk about sight and hearing and all, we're really talking about understanding and affection. So, yeah, an angel, when by one word, because they're in the world of thoughts and feelings, by one word, by your tone, they know your affections, and by the word, they know your thoughts, because they are born and raised in that there briar patch. You know, that's where they live. That's what they do. So for us who are in the natural world, we think that's quite something, but for them, that's just their way of not naturally being, but spiritually being.
Yeah, and a skill that you can pick up if you put in the work to take the angelic path, which is pursuing love for the entire human race. Easy as that sounds. All right, so we got a couple more questions let's get to here at the end. Our first one comes from YouTube, Ragged07. I am disabled. Will my friends and family know me for my spirit because I will look different? I had an NDE and that should be a book, but I was healed. Thank you very much for sharing a little of your experience there. And I would say, yeah, that there would be a recognition, because even in this world, what we really connect to in each other is sort of the essence or the spirit. Even though you can't see it directly, you can kind of pick it up through the body. And I think, Pete, as you and I were talking about before, that there's kind of this we're sort of seeing the affections and emotions of people, so we kind of get a sense of their spirit even through the physical. And I would think that would translate. Do you think that would be true?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they'd be recognized immediately from the affection. I think the physical is the least amount of recognition is based on the physical of a person. I think that's why, blind dates don't work out, because you get to know someone and you no longer even see whether they're physically attractive or non-attractive. It doesn't even occur to you. That's not how you know them. So then someone meets them for the first time, they see them physically and say, well, why do you recommend that person? Well, for qualities that you have to get to know, that you have to get to know their affections, have to get to know their personality and what they love. And when someone knows you in that way, they're going to recognize you regardless of physically what may have happened or may not happen, or disabilities or whatever it is.
Yeah, I had an uncle who recently passed away, but he had some physical challenges. And I don't ever think like, oh, am I going to recognize him or not? I feel like I'm going to know right away. And I believe that, some people who have reported experiences, they always say the people that they saw in the afterlife looked really healthy and great, but they always knew, who they were. So anyway, thank you very much for that question. Let's move on to the next one. This is from Mark on YouTube. A lot of people don't speculate about life after death. Is it better to not form beliefs about the afterlife in case they are wrong? I'd say that, yeah, it's not a totally harmless thing to form beliefs about the afterlife, because I'm sure that all of us have people that we feel like are causing problems in the world because of their belief in an afterlife. It's not a benign thing, and you definitely don't want to be adopting beliefs that are causing you to sort of short circuit basic decency in this world. If your afterlife beliefs are causing you to not treat everyone with love and kindness, not work on yourself, and not care about the world, then that could be a problem. As far as Swedenborg describes it, I'd say that the main danger is tenaciously grabbing onto beliefs. If we keep a relatively open mind, obviously, like right now we're doing this show where we're like fumbling around trying to say the right things about stuff, but there are much better teachers in the afterlife, and that everybody has the opportunity to be taught. And it's only if, as we were discussing in the beginning, it's only if you really cling to something that mindset becomes rigid. So I would say, as long as you're cool about it and just keep it pretty relaxed and keep a humility, like I'm willing to be wrong about this, you should be okay. What do you think, Pete?
Well, yeah, I'd say I would like to be able to hold all my beliefs really lightly and not invest myself in them. There's something Swedenborg talks about, is pride of one's intelligence. And if I start to fall in love with my own concepts and my own thinking, then I'm not going to be able to be led beyond them. So I want to have some humility in regard to what I believe at the moment, because my beliefs have changed over time. Hopefully they'll continue to change over time. So holding it lightly and being teachable and open to new information and letting go of old information that no longer serves you, I think having that fluidity and subtlety is probably something you keep for eternity. We talk about children in the other world. They're very open and very childlike and very humble.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Swedenborg's quote, it is wisdom to recognize that what we know is next to nothing compared to what we do not know. And that applies even to angels, people who know the most things in the afterlife. They know that, hey man, it's like as he describes it, like a bucket of water compared to the ocean. It's like nothing, as long as we can kind of keep that. All right, so we're trying to get into as many questions as we can here, since we got Pete here and we're on a roll. So let's take another one. From Death for Us again. What does it take for these people in the afterlife to know they are dead? Can we help them somehow? I like that question because I like the idea of helping. And I would say, I don't know. I don't know what we can do. I mean, I've certainly heard a lot of people talk about leading people into the light. I would sort of guess that Swedenborg says that we have spirits around us all the time. So the more that we get our facts straight, you know, and, you know, live in integrity, that the more that's going to, the less that's going to help them. As we were talking about in the beginning, Pete, like, the less that's going to have them delving into fantasy and kind of grabbing onto things, that could be a help in some way. But that's all I could really think of for that. Do you have any further thoughts?
Well, I guess I'm taking the question as helping people who have passed through the other life know they're dead. I think, of course, we've been saying they're actually not dead. They're really alive, and they're more alive in a lot of ways than they were in this particular level of consciousness. In dreaming, I know I used to do some lucid dreaming, and it says in Swedenborg, says that if man is caused to reflect on something, then they'll recognize that they've passed from one world to the other world, the spiritual world, if they're caused to reflect. If they aren't caused to reflect because God doesn't find that particularly useful, then they won't reflect. And I don't think leading them to realize that they've made that transition is probably very important to them. So I may have misunderstood the question, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, so it could be that they are where they need to be. And yeah, so it's all a combination of mysteries and little tidbits of things we know in here. So I'd say keep going, keep reaching for knowledge and see what you can find out. And because, yeah, we do want to be able to be as helpful as possible. Thanks for the question. Let's get to another one. This is from SF Will 3 on YouTube. Do we still have bodily functions in the spiritual world? Urination, defecation, menstruation. Are there treatment plants for the waste? So we're talking about potty, which hopefully some kids have stayed up to watch this because we can get some of the youth viewership. So I would say there is everything in the afterlife, but things are a little different. Like, things are more meaningful than they are here. Like, there is food, as Swedenborg describes it, but that food is like emotional qualities or love and goodness somehow are manifested in it. So I would think that, all these bodily functions that here we kind of think of as, okay, we've got to get rid of them. There is a place for that because he talks about that this correspondence and that negative things in the afterlife correspond to various kinds of bodily filth here. But as far as how that shakes down, like, is it like, okay, we're here at this angelic conference. Can you hold that? I've got to go poop. I don't know if that goes down. And Peter, do you want to take a stab at it?
Well, I have absolutely no idea. I think there is, like you said, going to be something that corresponds to all those things, indigestion, urination. There's going to be a cleansing of your spirit. There's going to be ideas that are mainly good, but there's parts of those things that have to be changed and left go of. So I think there'll be something that corresponds to all those things, but they'll be at a spiritual level. It isn't going to be at the natural level because it's not a natural world.
Yeah. Yep. And menstruation, like this idea of the cycles and giving birth, and just that he says that in the spiritual world, you don't have babies like you have here, but you give birth to what he calls goods and truths or ideas and feelings, and that maybe there's some kind of process there where there's something comparable. So the basic message that I get from Swedenborg is that things aren't here for no reason, that we don't deal with them and then not have to deal with it, that they may have an expanded or more pleasant role, but they're there. So there's us just guess. Yeah, did you have some?
Yeah, I just want to say, Swedenborg talks about the spiritual world is the world of causes and the natural world is the world of effects. So even our bodily functions flow through the spiritual world to us. So there is going to be something that corresponds because that's where all causes come from.
Yep. That is good. Okay, we have a lot of good, great questions. We're going to have to cut it off here with just one more. We'll try to, throughout the week, get to the rest of you guys just via text answer. And if you're watching this afterwards, feel free to leave a question. We'll try to get it to next week or we'll talk to you in the comments there. So let's do our last one. This is from Tanya on Facebook. My mother has said often that she wonders if my dad knew that he had passed because he was on meds to put him in a comatose state. I feel like we all know, but that is only a speculation. I appreciate you sharing a little bit of your story there. And yeah, I would think, I mean, you know, medication, you know, can be a really nice thing for someone who's in a lot of pain, but it's a physical thing, you know, and that when we shed the physical, we would be shedding everything, you know, in that, along with things that are clouding our mind from the physical. And that the way Swedenborg describes it, it seems everybody, at least at the initial point of death, knows what's happening. You know, their angels are around them. They're telling them what's going on. It's only after that that you can slip back down if that's what's useful for you at the time. But I would certainly think that, everybody would have clear, wouldn't be blocked from that kind of understanding or clarity by any circumstances in the physical world. Pete, did you have anything to add there?
Yeah, I'd just say any drugs or comatose state is referring to the natural body, the natural mind. And the spiritual mind may be very lucid, very awake, and very aware of that transition. Recently, I've had a number of elderly relatives passing, and although they may be in stages of Alzheimer's or so forth, all of a sudden they're talking from an experience they're having, a lot of clarity, but it's in the spiritual world. They're seeing things that I'm not seeing. So the division between a spiritual and natural is, yeah, the natural may be comatose, the natural may be under drugs, but that doesn't mean the spirit is. The spirit is really where we live and experience life. So it can be very, very alive, very, very lucid, even though their body happens to be there physically doing nothing.
Yeah, I've heard it referred to as terminal lucidity, and that this is a phenomenon that happens where people who are close to death, but you know, have been not operating at full mental capacity, suddenly are really with it. And so I think that lines up with what you're saying there. Appreciate it. All right, so as we wrap up here, we've been doing a lot of talking about ideas and thinking. So let's just dip slightly into the other side of things, the sort of emotional experiential side, in a segment that I call correspondences. And we talked a little bit about what
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? The mission, is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny?
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take.